Hello and welcome to the MITI podcast.
We are a small but dedicated group with a vision for agroecology and the culture
around agriculture.
My name is Anurag.
And my name is Lotus.
At the MITI Collective, we believe in bringing in transformative changes to how we as humans look at food. Agriculture and biodiversity should go hand in hand, but how to do that in the current era of rapid digitalization and technological advancements without compromising the ecological mission is something worth looking at.
Some of the most common terms in this context that we hear over and over again are Internet of Things, artificial intelligence, and data science. How are these terms defined when it comes to natural ecosystems? That's what we are going to talk about today with our guest, Alicia Charena. Welcome, Alicia.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for your time today. And you're joining us all the way from France. And salut to France and everyone in France. Would you like to give us a brief introduction about you and your work?
Yes, of course. So as you just mentioned, I'm an entrepreneur, and together with a team of data scientists at Fold AI, we bring IoT, AI or machine learning, depending, and some technologies that we see in our everyday lives in the cities, in the forest. And we do something that we like to call ecosystem intelligence. Basically, I think I'm a doer. That's why I said an entrepreneur. I have different pieces of knowledge because I'm a legal person. I studied law. And then I studied forestry, but I worked in different companies and in tech, startups, and social enterprises. So yeah, that's my background.
How did you decide on coming from law into what you're doing now?
I would put the question the other way around. How did I come to do law? I study law because I was studying history of art and history before, but then I realized okay, I come from a middle class family and I had to move to do my study. I was 17. And, you know, I had to figure finances and everything, and it was quite hard. And as I realized, I couldn't keep that pace with, paying the flat rent and this and that. I had to find a way to make it easier. So I had to change my study. And there I was like, okay, what is it that I should do now? And school doesn't prepare you for the world, for what you basically need to do in the world. And I really had those moments of, wow, what is it I want to do in my existence? And my boyfriend at this time said, look, Alicia, you're an advocate. You want to, I was very appalled by injustices. I wanted to change things. So he was like, yeah, just do that. And I did that because of my boyfriend. And there I went to all the all the topics where you don't really know which law to apply. Like all those moments where law is not applicable anymore, like the internet, which law do you apply there? Or sometimes, you know, there are some conflicts in law. And from there, I just realized what I want to do is to solve big issues in the world. And so it brought me to working. I was working all the time as I was a student to pay for my rent. And I tried out things. because I went, so you know, because you were there too, I was at the Fraunhofer Institute in Munich. I went to law firm in Luxembourg. I worked in a startup. We were producing consumer electronics, like the first smart wireless headsets, so-called hearable. And going through all these experiences, I realized what I really want to do. And I had a, I don't know how to call it, maybe a mindset, yeah, of continuous improvement. I wanted to improve things. So I started to do quality for the production line in the startup where I was. But then I realized, okay, I'm improving things. So I try to make it more sustainable, produce less scrap, to use less chemicals, this and that. But what I want to do is to reduce it to the so drastically that we only use the necessary energy. And so I basically took all the purpose to the point that I wanted to make the purpose use less basically, and protect more. So I needed to go. I really needed to have a cut there and do something else. I always wanted to do stuff, but you know, I was an entrepreneur, but I didn't know exactly what to do. There are so many possibilities. But one day I was in my bathroom listening to the radio and the French radio, but I was still in Germany, and they were talking about this mass extinction of bird species that was happening there, and a horrific study. And they were mentioning the bird species that were dying, and I was like, no way, this is not possible. I thought those birds will remain forever as I was a kid. So I was in the shower and I was so horrified that I was like, okay, Alicia, you need to do something against that. And yeah, this is just the moment where I decided, okay, now I become an entrepreneur for real. I
had a very, very similar moment when I read about bananas going extinct, because I couldn't even imagine, you know, they're bananas. How come the world would exist with no bananas anymore, you know?
Yes.
But I'm very happy about these small epiphanies, because it drives people like you to start something very meaningful to them. And in this context, I wonder about the challenges that you faced starting your own thing, because it's really obvious that you had a very extended experience and you experimented a lot. How about the first steps of creating something of your own?
A lot of fear. It's right what you said. It's really sad that human beings need such horrific information or realities to take action, to start something. But it's true, right? Looking at the COVID or any other events in history, it makes people just courageous, and it makes you fearless for a moment, because this as you said, epiphany, it just gives you so much power and energy in the moment. You don't have anything to lose, because you know, losing the birds or the bananas or whatever it is, it's too horrific, so you have to act right now. And first I was like, okay, let's put all the ideas on the wall. And there I was with Friedrich Persner. He's also in the company with us. Mm-hmm. And we started very, very, as if we would be in the company already, like we took post-its and paper and pens, and we filled the walls with ideas. And then, step by step, it went bigger. From this idea to a hobby, because of course at the beginning you can't believe it's true, you're doing the business because it's bigger than you. So we were like, no, it's just a hobby, you know, we like this idea, so we just try it during the weekend or during our holidays or whatever. We don't have holidays, but just during our free time. And at the beginning, the feedbacks were very bad. People were telling us, like, look, you really want to earn money by putting sensors in trees? No, you know, like, it's not going to work. And, you know, forestry is there is no economy for trees. I mean, even our own parents were afraid about this. After two droughts during the summer, after Greta Thunberg, and, communication in the newspaper, tree species diebacks, and fires in Australia and this and that, people started to realize, oh shit, and the forest would come to die. What do we do there? You know, like, so suddenly we could go out and say, hey, look, we monitor trees and forests. We create this internet of forests. People were amazed and they were like, oh yes, it's a very good idea.
So nature marketed for you, basically.
Yeah, but as I said, it's really sad to come to this point that you need the forest to die for people to realize, oh, maybe we should do something about it.
Some people realize only when something goes wrong, and then they start acting.
It's
very hard to sometimes bring in change. Unless there is visible evidence of it. But why
they need a trigger.
They need a trigger. And sometimes you wonder if this kind of evidence is really needed, you know? Why do we have to wait until damage happens?
Yeah, there is scientific evidences, and obviously I'm really... I'm in love with science, so I really like facts and studies, and you know, I'm really curious about this mindset.
Yeah.
But there are things, and there are so many, that we just don't know, and we cannot just take action. Waiting for proofs, or we just need also to sometimes step back and observe. And there is something that is given to human beings, like to other animals, it's instinct.
Yes.
And it's just so normal to be careful about things, to think twice. And sometimes we have bad feelings about something, and even though we don't know why yet, we know that we shouldn't do it. And this is a very good, this is a very good reaction. And basically, this is also based on science, right? We have bad instincts that just developed over time because, you know, I don't know, the prehistoric man, they just started to, you know, be careful because of wild animals, and it's developed over time. But there are also things that we know and that we just don't want to think about. We sometimes try to avoid thinking about consequences. and we lie to ourselves. And I think in specifically when it comes to biodiversity, climate, all these topics, or even pandemics, we just don't want to think about the worst case scenario.
I think also when you say that you shouldn't do this because human instinct says so, it is hard to convince somebody. And I think that is why your work is very important, because it gives important scientific evidence to to bring in that change.
Yes.
And I think the scientific evidence and the instinct can find a middle ground to eventually make humans understand where they are wrong. So I would like to know, what do you do through your company?
Yeah. This is a little bit like what you just said, basically. There are things that we can see, that we can feel around us. But most of the time, those are the consequences of what we do. And in the forest in particular, when we see the fire or the pest or the storm, then it's most of the time too late. And we had this conversation before. This is a little bit about connection, and maybe what you were talking about, like this. If you live in forests, there are so many things that your brain will record from what is happening around you, and you will get this instinct about what this biodiversity ecosystem, how it works, what you should do, what you should not do. But since we live in cities, and we are far from the trees and from the soil and from the birds, through this we lost connection, we lost our intelligence towards ecosystems. We were talking about indigenous people. This is maybe the reason why they are not so far from science. Their science come from their experiences, from that what they learned through generations. And here, what we would like to do is create reconnection to nature, saying, okay, we are all in our cities, in our offices, in our buildings, on the internet, on our smartphones, on our computers. And we don't get to go there so often, right? But the food we eat, the water we drink, all this gets delivered to where we live. So we don't even get to, gather all these things, these resources that we obviously need to live. And so we need to have this information somewhere, and we want to bring this information on the computer, on the phones of people, saying, okay, this is what Earth created for you today. Those are the resources that you use and that have been produced, and sometimes for free or in a non-monetized way. Yeah, of course, now I talk about it in a very meta level, but basically our sensors, they gather information from sensors that can give you index about, the growth of trees, like the biomass creation, the capabilities of trees to their resilience against storms, for example, these kind of things. So it gives you information about what's happening there. There has been a paper, scientific paper published some times ago. I can maybe give it to you later. You could link it about climate smart forestry. And how you can, manage the forest in such a way that you make sure that the CO2 that is captured there remains, or even that more of CO2 goes captured. this paper was saying that we drastically miss information about the forest, and that by being better informed, we could potentially gain 30% efficiency in capturing CO2 in forests. So this knowledge thing, it's not a joke. It really helps you. This is the indigenous people power. Because of their years of observation, they have this intelligence that they can use for their profit and better manage their resources.
Do you think that the lives of indigenous people would be endangered when such a drastic change in information occurs? Meaning that a lot of these people exist in natural habitats still.
Yes, yes.
And they have this knowledge already.
Yeah.
When their knowledge is being transmitted to decision makers or other people who can make changes in systems through a digital way or through ways that are more familiar to us in modern society, do you think indigenous people would become obsolete and their lives, their experiences wouldn't be as important?
Of course not. Like, their experiences are not less important. And sometimes it's different information or different kind of communication. And I mean, I would love us to be obsolete. You know, I would love humanity to think we don't need to see the data on the computer or the science, but when we look at it, it's just, we are losing forests, we are losing soil, we are losing ecosystems and biodiversity. So let's take a step back and see how we can manage this situation. It's a risk situation. It's a war situation. And but since it's not the case, and it's fine, we can create data for decision makers, companies, I don't know, foresters, managers, to make it clearer which decision, or at least make decisions based on facts. And indigenous people will not become, or their knowledge will not become obsolete through the digitalization of data or something. The indigenous people will die because of deforestation. This is their risk right now.
Still in the topic of indigenous people, I wonder if you find inspiration for your data collecting systems through their kind of life experiences, culture, and tradition of observing. Because you made a very nice analogy between how indigenous people observe the biodiversity changes in a certain habitat just by sitting still and watch a certain tree change a certain way. And on the other hand, as you said, also unfortunately, we need a sensor on this tree to realize this change. And hence, I was wondering if you find inspiration in ways of indigenous people to set up certain frameworks or models for your data collection.
Yes, but very holistically, not only in indigenous people, but in biology and every kind of animal in general, because basically our science is between something like bioinformatics. I mean, we have specialists in bioinformatics in the team, or neurosciences. And this is all about biomimetism. And we are always amazed nowadays about how much we talk about AIs and artificial intelligence. And when we talk about it internally, we laugh about it because, of course, we know that this, what we call artificial intelligence nowadays, it's not intelligent yet. This is a concept for the future, or maybe one day, but that's what currently works today and is called artificial intelligence in the business is not even as intelligent as an insect, as Friedrich would say. So he studied insect brains before. So you know, they produce neuronal networks in our team, and they are like, well, and you know, it's so dummy. it does so low compared to any other animal brain you could find. And so in a way, it's sad because our brains, they have this ability to observe, record, put together, analyze, and, you know, make decisions. this is what indigenous people brains do, and this is why sometimes they say, no, we shouldn't do this. We don't know exactly why. Maybe they cannot explain, you know. And this is a little bit like, I simplify, don't be horrified about this tech simplification I do, but when you have neuronal networks, or you have, as you know, all these things we talk about, deep learning, machine learning, AIs, you have algorithms and they do some analysis based on data that has been gathered through sensors. Yeah. And basically, we put those sensors, we just put them on trees. This is why we say we do ecosystem intelligence, because they just sense what happens there. And then, over time, they will learn new features, and they will be able to recognize an event and say, look here, you have a threat, they will see smoke in the air because there is a wildfire, or they will sense that the trees miss water, there is some stress due to the drought, so yeah. Things that maybe indigenous people just see without knowing, you know, they see, oh, when I look at this tree, it looks like it's sick.
Yeah.
And I mean, some of our people still have this sense. Of course, foresters who are working in the forest in their daily life, they know what happens there.
Can you give us an example of an instance where your sensors helped foresters take quick decisions from large scale destruction happening to the forest?
Yeah, so as you know, we're in a very early stage in the company, but we had two pilots, one in France, one in Germany. So we put the sensors in forests, in the mountains, and in Baden-Württemberg in Germany.
Is it the Black
Sorry?
Is it in the Black Forest?
Oh, no. In France, it's in the mountains in Vosges. So nearby. And in Germany, it's not far from... it's more southeast. we could already make some conclusions on climate. And I can tell you that the old forest, like more natural old forests where we put the sensors in had a better, were better buffering the climate, the temperatures, the temperature rise. So whenever you have a drought or a peak in temperature, and if you have very old trees or, you know, resilient trees, they will keep your local climate cool, which is a huge asset for agriculture. You were talking about forest management, but it's also about agriculture. And in Germany, in our pilots, we also realized that some trees were more affected by the wind than others. So those are inputs that can help you to, you know, manage the forest the best way possible.
One of the latest trends in agriculture is Agriculture 4.0. And it talks about various forms of precision agriculture techniques that talk about improving yield or food production, providing for the growing population of the world's hungry. But it's still sometimes the case that I find it very unrealistic that how can something like this provide to the larger world's population while trying to precisely cater to a certain kind of cropping system that does not support biodiversity. But then if you take a forest is a natural ecosystem which is self-sustaining. It does not need this kind of constant input of nutrition. And this kind of system has been adopted in something called agroforestry as well, where they grow edible forests. And they do not constantly have to put in artificial chemicals to cycle the nutrients. How do you see the work of sensors in the future of agroforestry, for example?
Yeah, you're completely right. It's a nonsense. It's a biological nonsense. And yes, you're right. We don't base our agriculture on these simple facts. But we rather make monocultures that don't allow you to have a system that, you know, regenerates. And you then need to bring the nutrients in the soil from somewhere else. Yeah. So you need to drive them. It's completely crazy to think that you have to produce CO2. You have to burn biomass to bring biomass, to produce biomass, to eat. Yeah. So you lose so much energy on the way. And this is what forests could solve. This is what I was talking about before. The good part in forests is that the trees, they have a cycle and they lose their leaves and the leaves go in the soil. And if you have a very healthy soil with some worms and mushrooms, you know, the fungi, they will decompose all this into nutrients. And through that, you can grow food. It's just amazing. It's just there in nature. And so when you talk about agriculture 4.0, I just want to say, what about agroforestry 4.0? We could do agroforestry alone, but since we are done now, we need to reconnect to nature. We need new intelligence, you know. This 4.0 is okay. We can connect our agriculture and forests, and we can, I'm not talking about going back to, you know, times where there was no technology. I'm just talking about how can we use this technology for a purpose. Let's just don't use technology for using technology and scaling, But let's just first find the purpose and then use the best, you know, solutions that you have, tools. Yeah, I think tech is a good tool to accelerate when you have great ideas.
Well, although there is this argument about agroforestry that I often come across is that to meet the demands of the world's hungry with the growing population, agroforestry is not exactly a scalable option.
Yes, I mean, I'm not there to say that this is going to solve everything. But why is it that we don't push for it a little? Because, sorry to say, but through these monocultures, like, we lose biodiversity. Biodiversity is a huge tipping point. And, you know, the more we go into this direction, the earlier we have a problem. we will not be able to feed ourselves anymore if we go this way only. So I'm pretty sure that, there is this urban farming trend, and I'm not completely against advancing, you know, in this kind of innovation, because we are just too many human beings on this planet, and I agree that it's quite a challenge to feed us all.
It is.
But we cannot lose soil. Mm-hmm. It's a very utopic to think that we will be able to feed everyone without soil.
And not just soil. I bet you are familiar with the last IPCC report on biodiversity. Yeah. I think we are endangering a lot of natural factors and species and everything around us. We're endangering the environment we're living in.
Mm-hmm.
I do agree with you on the point of view that technology is not necessarily to be eliminated in order to live a green future. But I personally sometimes think about technology from a start to end perspective. And I really want to ask you about this. Because, of course, technology is justifiable, especially when it has a bigger purpose. But what do you think about how much resources and material technology demands? And what do you think about the management of this manufacture or supply chain of electronic chips and electronic devices that we are using, even if it is for the ultimate purpose and the ultimate benefit of the ecosystem?
Yeah, you know, we started this conversation with it. I was telling you that I realized one of the biggest mindsets or the trend I took in my life was to improve things. I wanted to do quality and reduce. Yeah, this is the point of tech. Tech should be here to reduce, to make it possible to reduce consumption, energy consumption, and scrap. We shouldn't throw away food anymore because we have technology. We shouldn't, produce so much energy because we have technology to store energy. We should use technology to gather the energy that it just given from the sun and the wind and all this, you know, physical interactions in the world. So yeah, technology, I hope you didn't understand me wrong. I think every time we produce technology, we should be assessing, making the trade-off between what this technology will bring in terms of well-being, energy, you know, and what it will take. And we should never allow technology to go on the market if this trade-off is not positive. Too many times I see pieces of you know, hardware that have been produced for the better, but they just forgot to make this trade-off.
Definitely, yeah. Especially if, unfortunately, the markets of today are built on this mindset. Like, it doesn't matter why we are producing it, as long as we can sell it, you know.
Yes, and you know, I can tell you from our perspective, we are really spending days and hours and headaches to to understand how we will reduce the energy we will use during the process. We ultimately spend weeks on really, if you look at us, you would think, oh my gosh, those guys, they will never go on the market, because we use solar panels.
Yeah.
How difficult is it to gather some energy from the sun under the trees in a dark area in the forest to make sensors work all the time and send real-time data all the time. And you know, the first prototype was running on nickel batteries. Like, even that point, in that point in time, we could have taken very normal lithium-ion batteries, but you know, those batteries sometimes explode and we put them in forest, so we were like, oh. So how shall we proceed? And those old battery systems, they were very strong. They cost much more, and they make it through the winter. And so for the first test, we did use that. And from this step to the solar panels, you know, there was so many hours of work. And this is what technology, what innovation is about. The reason why we should go for IoT or 5G, I don't want to start new debates, but many times I hear voices about 5G, and why would we use IoT? Just because it reduces the amount of energy you need. We do something that is called edge computing. So basically, by putting some intelligence in the very tiny IoT devices, we reduce the amount of information that has to be sent. And this is what technology is about, reducing. And 5G, just to mention it, it's about reducing. If we come to use 5G to stream videos, yeah. Of course we'll have a problem. But if we use 5Gs in production lines to send stream information very quickly internally in the production, why not? It's just way more efficient, and it will reduce energy.
I think it's about the a role of consumer electronics in our lives, where people have demands for, you know, faster streaming services or more features. You know, the latest Samsung phone or iPhone has so many features in it, half of which I would never use in my regular life, but I end up paying so much for it, and there is infrastructure to support this kind of technology built everywhere, which is kind of counterintuitive to where we want to go, considering that you mentioned that the role of technology is to reduce. In the current scenario, I do not see the world economies or the large corporations trying to reduce it anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, there is the tendency to scale up their productions. Even during the COVID-19, I saw Apple putting up marketing advertisements of their new models that are going to come into the market.
Yeah.
And I was like, what the fuck is happening here? Like, of Corona. This dude wants to sell his phones to people.
Yeah.
So it sometimes is very weird how humans think.
Yes, I'm completely with you. I really hope that people, when they start to go out now after lockdowns, and first of all that they are very careful, but that they just, if they come to consume things, that they do consume food, and that they do go to shops, you know, that are really well sourced, local, you know, ethical, fair, and that they don't go for this tech. This is really overwhelming. I understand your point about tech. I also hate my phone. I really hate my phone for being like he is. Like this form factor that, you know, it's not handy. It's not made for human beings. That's also what I was talking about before. I think if we do tech, then please biomimetism. Yeah? Look at nature, how it looks like. My eyes can't look at the screen too long. My hands cannot hold you. There are so many things. The design of things is so important.
Yes.
That's true.
Yes, and honestly, I am very inspired, and I appreciate that you in Fold AI give due effort and time to making a design that is not by default mindless about
this. Yes.
Yeah,
thank you for saying that, because we really have long nights sometimes. It makes me think about the packaging of the sensors, so you know, those this hardware is in the forest. So this is the worst case scenario for hardware. And it could be in the water, right? But sometimes it rains, or there is a snowstorm or whatever. And we were looking at the packaging, because of course it needs a roof. We cannot let it like this. So we started to think about, okay, how can we use natural things? So we were thinking, okay, mushrooms, why not using fungi? And the process is still very expensive now. So I hope that many, many, many innovators will think about it in the next years to make it more efficient. Mm-hmm. So we used cork in the first place. And then we realized, look, if we use cork, it looks really amazing. It fits to the forest, and it really looks like a small fungi on the tree or mushroom, you know. But this cork has to be produced somewhere in Portugal or whatever. It has to be sent out, and you know, there is a process. It's a new product. We need to cut it and this and that, and well, we thought, what about just using things that are thrown away? Maybe it doesn't look that nice, but you know. And yeah, so we ended up doing cradle to cradle and gathering bottles of water and, you know, glass pieces and Tetra Paks and and yes, it's a painful process, but it's also a nice process to be thinking about like how to use less things, how to make it cost nothing.
Definitely, and especially that the other mindless way is easier, to be very frank, because it's much easier to just say, okay, we invest that much in packaging, plastic, whatever covers or whatever it is, and that's it, you know, problem solved, if you don't think about the consequences later on.
Yes, I mean, of course, the packaging we will use will be reused, and then it still needs to be thrown away or recycled, hopefully. But yeah, at least we give it a second life.
Repurposing material into other forms, especially from a company point of view, where you are trying to repurpose materials in your final product, is very inspiring. I would also say that in many ways in how agroforestry works is that you use what you produce in that kind of self-sustaining system. And that is the way to go. In many ways, if society also functioned this way, we would be producing lesser wastage and lesser, we would affect biodiversity lesser this way. And somehow this also relates to the concept of circular economy, which is a very, very attractive topic nowadays, but not so much in practice. What do you think about circular economy, and how are you inculcating it in your company?
Yeah, thank you for asking this question. It's very interesting. So if I can position us as a company, I think we are at the corn between that's what nature gives us. So these natural ecosystem services that nature is delivering to the humanity and animals. This industry 4.0 you were talking about, rather is agroforestry 4.0. I would prefer this term. And what I like to call biocircular economies. Because I often hear circular economies or bioeconomy, but what about putting them together? It should, like, our energy should be produced naturally, and we should reuse everything possible. This is the most efficient way we can work. There I'm completely, of course, for this new economy. I hope really that this moment, this difficult moment we live right now, will lead to this. But we need to be very fast in this. And I also here really want to drop a word about politics or the European Union. We have made a lot of communication about bioeconomy or circular economies. But in some directives, way we were working, we made big, huge mistakes. By pushing for green energy, so biomass produced through, planting, we lead to massive deforestation sometimes, or to massive soil destruction, which is very sad. It's just counterproductive, and this is what we created in the last couple of years by pushing through incentives for this green energy. So we really need to think holistically. The ecosystem is something very complex, and the world is very complex, economy is very complex. We need to think with this complexity. We need to embrace it. We need to like complexity, really. And this is what we do in Fold.ai. We really embrace complexity. We say, okay, there are too many informations in the forest sent out. We as humans, we cannot capture everything. Let's use our computers that are very fast in analytics, in computing power, help us analyze this information. The forests are threatened by things that are happening very fast, even faster over time. The climate situation is, taking a different pace. And changes happen very fast right now. We have storms and fires and pests and this and that. So we cannot, the poor foresters, they cannot cover such huge amounts of land and discover all these threats so fast. So it's risk management. And when it comes to ecosystem, we have to embrace complexity. We have to like the fact that it's not simple and say, okay, if we want to understand it and take the best decision possible, we need to go through everything. Everything we can sense. And it's the same for our economy. If we need to produce energy, we have to think how this energy is produced. The plants, as I said before, they need their nutrients, their water, their sun. Where do they come from? And yeah, in this process, we shouldn't lose energy. This is the constant trade-off we should do. So I really hope that the EU Commission and parliaments will change it as fast as possible, because we are losing land, we are losing forests.
That is so interesting, Alicia, because I think the amount of data that you're collecting and the amount of evidence that you're collecting, to rephrase, will help you bring out these changes, these very pertinent changes. You mentioned that we have to embrace complexity. I think somewhere the fact that complexity inherently exists in nature is kind of overlooked by humans. And we have this tendency to oversimplify things and in process lose important things in the form of trade-offs. That is where we end up affecting parameters that are important in valuing the biodiversity that we have. You as a company have done pilot projects both in France and Germany. Do you intend to expand globally to collect a larger sample of data? Because there is forests are divided into various climatic conditions, and all of them have their own needs. Mm. And it is diverse again when it comes to complexity. Globally, the complexity is multifold. So I think the potential for your company is much higher that way as well. Where do you position yourself globally?
Yeah, so you're right. We already tried to have two different countries and two different kind of forests and climates to make sure we have you know, different data. And the power of these technologies we use is that they can cope with this and like big amounts of data, big differences, you know, recognize trends, events, and this is why the broader the spectrum, the better, of course, and the more information, the better. For now, as I told you before, I like to be local. I like to source locally. You know, if you go for something, you should always look around you. But we want to connect as many forests as possible. We start with Europe because it's next door, and this is where we understand the ecosystem the best because we know it, and you know, we grow organically. We are a bootstrapped company, so yeah, everything we have right now we paid for. And yeah, we also think about other continents. We have some projects, some partners from other continents, from Africa and Asia, and you know, so why not? If there is an occasion, we will of course do that. There are also so many different applications for those sensors, and we will not be solving the same issues in different places. I guess you know, there are some places where you have every season, summer season, a lot of wildfires, and there it may be very interesting to have early detectors. And in some other places, you have mafias, you know, doing wild cutting. And that would be also interesting to have detectors for wild cutters. In other regions, you have a tendency for, I don't know, pests. You've probably heard about the bug beetles because you are in Germany. They are disseminating huge amounts of forest, and yeah, maybe they want to have an early detection of the male insects when they start to attack the trees. You know, there are so many possibilities.
It sounds like a really big portfolio of activities that are applicable to Fold AI, and it's really exciting, Alicia, and I really like that you came up with this answer to a need for data. And as you said, hopefully this data will compensate to our disconnection with our ecological intuition, so to say. And I had one last question, actually, about Fold AI. What's behind the name? I get AI, but not...
Yes, a very good question. So we like to fold the AI. So we fold intelligence, make it very tiny, and so we can spread it everywhere, you know. So our sensor nodes are everywhere in the forest, and it's a piece of intelligence everywhere, and it's a network. And yeah, we also like the idea of, you know, we are very Japanese, Japan fans. And yeah, we like folding.
Yeah.
This idea. And also, yes, as I told you before, that the AI is so big. It's such a big idea in society. It's a little bit like blockchain, you know, those buzzwords you hear everywhere. And we just wanted to make it smaller and say we can really achieve huge things, big things with that. But yeah, there is a misconception around AI. That what makes it interesting is that we bring a lot of tiny pieces of well analyzed data, and through that we really hope to make decision makers more aware about the reality of the field. That's why fold AI. And maybe you heard Aya too. This is the name of the platform, so the sensors. We called it because the Aya is the goddess of nature and forests in Africa. Yeah, so we like this idea of having the goddess of nature protecting our devices. That's so very spiritual in a sense.
Yeah, definitely. And great namings. Yeah, I like the concept behind both names, actually.
Yeah, if you look on our website, on the Fold AI website, you can see that we play around with it in the design, and we fold many things.
Bringing science and spirituality together in that sense is very essential, and you have somehow tried to do that through your company. I would like to bring the podcast to an end by thanking Alicia for joining us in this wonderful episode and disseminating some of her knowledge. It is often the case that artificial intelligence and other modern technologies are misunderstood and often argued with in a way that people want to go back, but it may not be true always.
Yeah, thank you so much, Alicia.
I thank you, Miti Collective, for all the great content you create. And I'm really a fan of what you do. And I was reading through and listening, and I enjoyed it to finally find some content about these topics. And I also want to thank all the team, like Chan, Jake, Giovanni, and Friedrich, for just going through this pain and this amazing experience together, and just following me. Sometimes is very, very amazing, but very strange dreams. I just need to mention it sometimes.
Yeah.
Because they really follow me everywhere. It's amazing.
It sounds like you have a really great team.
Oh yes. I think the best team you can imagine in a startup. What is more important than the team that will help you to go there?
Thank you, Alicia, and thanks for everyone you mentioned on your team. We send them our regards, reaching the end of the episode. And thanks for everyone who listened to us and listened to Alicia educating us about mini folded AI.